Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to talk about parenting because we found this great, it's a long form article. Well, it's not real long. It's longer than a blog, I guess, but it's not quite as long as a article. I guess I don't know the difference between a blog and an article. I don't know what differentiates.
I have no idea.
Maybe the author, if the author is paid or not. It's all right, Barry.
Barry White.
But
I'm going to sing later at the Holiday Inn in town. No, this is called The Parenting Trap.
Right.
And is this a blog? Did we decide?
I don't know. We didn't decide. But it's from the Association for Psychological Science.
It's a reputable organization.
Yeah, I think so. And it's talking about parenting from the perspective of a presenter who presented, it's been a couple of years, I think.
Right, 2016. Yeah,
2016. Mm-hmm. And at the APS annual convention in Chicago.
Right.
And it's Dr. Gopnik.
I think that's correct.
Gopnik?
I think it's Gopnik.
I got it. We didn't even practice beforehand, folks, so that's pretty good.
But she is a child development specialist.
Yes.
Right? Teaches at a university.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And she calls it an evolutionary look at childhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
She looks at childhood from an evolutionary standpoint. There's some controversy about how long our species has been on the planet.
Right.
Not our predecessors.
Yeah, yeah.
But our species. We know that, for example, that speech developed about 50,000 years ago.
Right. Okay?
But even if we go back 6 or 7,000 years ago, mm-hmm. with clearly there's written history about 4,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we go back to those years, the point that she makes in the article is that we are raising children differently today
mm-hmm.
than any time in our evolutionary history.
Right.
Excuse me.
I think the first line in this article is fascinating. Mm-hmm. You need some water.
I need some something.
But the first line in this article is awesome because I had not heard this before. But
right.
She says, the author says, the word parenting did not enter the popular lexicon until the 1950s.
Okay. And that's the stopper right there.
Right.
That's the showstopper
right.
for me. Because as soon as I saw that line, it tweaked my interest
right.
and curiosity. But it also reminded me that the word teenager
mm-hmm.
didn't appear until about the same time.
Right.
We had no concept of the teen years as being a specific...
Right.
We knew it was a stage of development. But the word teenager was actually developed by advertisers.
Right.
When we began to build large high schools
mm-hmm.
and suddenly said, wow, there's a whole group of kids here.
Mm-hmm.
It was a demographic
right.
that they could send ads to.
Right.
Okay. But the word teenager came at about the same time, I think in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And the word parenting
mm-hmm.
as a verb
right.
appears in the 1950s.
Right.
So this whole concept of parenting is really, really recent.
Yeah.
And when you look at 4,000 or 5,000 years of human history,
mm-hmm.
it's a significant departure.
Yeah.
And that's the point that she's making here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so the idea that a lot of these concepts are relatively recent.
Right.
You know, I think that most people who think about or even talk about parenting or try to, you know, give their impressions about parenting
mm-hmm.
and everything probably have no idea of what it was like prior to parenting being a verb.
My parents couldn't have gone into a bookstore or a library
right.
and had a parenting section.
Right.
Now there's a whole
yeah.
shelf after shelf after okay. shelf mm-hmm. of books on parenting. The concept didn't exist. You know,
yeah.
when I think about how my mother, what about our grandparents?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't...
So it's fascinating the recency of
these ideas. And I love it the way that, as we kind of go through some of the things today in this article and from her lecture, the idea that, you know, we really need to think about how we're thinking about this. We really need to think about how we're talking about it and how we're, you know, what is parenting? What are we trying to accomplish with parenting? And are we really sort of being disillusioned that there is this particular way that we need to be doing it?
You know, our grandparents, when they had children, mm-hmm. must have felt two obligations. Mm-hmm. One was to keep their children alive. Yes. This was in the days of polio and smallpox, you know, chicken pox and mm-hmm. different childhood diseases that we didn't quite have. I mean, you could die of pneumonia in our grandparents' mm-hmm. age, you know. And so one of their jobs was to keep us alive. Mm-hmm. The second job was to keep their children clothed and fed mm-hmm. and in school for some number of years, sixth or eighth grade or 10th grade or something. And that was about it. And the kids, I think our grandparents sort of raised themselves. Mm-hmm. Maybe even our parents did.
Yeah.
They just sort of played outside and there were no structured activities like we have today.
Right.
Gymnasiums and...
Well, but and depending on where they lived, you know, once they were, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, they were working.
That's right.
You know, because if they lived on farms and things like that, there was no other place for them to go except for out to work.
That's right. Or the Amish culture today. Right. You know, mm-hmm. what do they do? They keep their kids alive and they mm-hmm. and then they work as soon mm-hmm. as they can. They start working.
Yeah.
Okay. And so. This really is a recent development. This whole notion of parenting, parenting by design, doesn't appear until the 1950s.
Yeah, and so she has this great line, and you know, if our IT department was just a little bit stronger, we would be able to pull this clip so that we could actually play it. Because
I'm containing myself.
The link in the show notes.
The IT department is sitting to my right.
The link in the show notes takes you to the article, but there's also an embedded video on that website of her talk.
I think it's I just started to watch the beginning of it. It appears to be the talk that she did in Chicago,
right?
And it's about an hour long.
Yeah.
So, but it's well worth to invest an hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she has this great line, and again, if we had the time and resources, we kind of pull this clip, but mm-hmm. instead you can read it.
I have to put on my glasses.
I know.
You don't like when I do it.
The reason I did that was because I saw you put your glasses down, and so I was like, well, you know, now I'm asking you to read it.
I have it in 10-point font here, but the picture is that there's something parents can do, some kind of expertise they can acquire, some techniques they can learn, and if they just do the right thing, they'll end up having the right kinds of children, and then these children will become the right kinds of adults. Gopnik said during her Bring the Family address at this annual convention in Chicago.
Yeah.
The idea that you can, if you do the right things with your children, you will create the child that you want. Who does that make us think of? J.B. Watson.
We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Let's see, our behavior theory. Behavior therapy session was released. We did that on October 3rd.
Right.
This month we were talking about behaviorism, and we mentioned John Watson's. Mm-hmm. Sounds very similar to that.
Right. And
Give
that was
any
in,
kid.
Right. And that was in way back in 1912, 1920.
Yeah, early 1900s.
Turn of the century, of the last century. And he said, you know, I can use these techniques, mm-hmm. and if you know the whole story, it didn't turn out so well with his own children.
Right.
So he said that he could, but in fact, it didn't work so well when he applied it to his own children.
Yeah.
But by the 1950s, this gets resurrected. Mm-hmm. So we have this baby boom generation just appearing and this concept of parenting by design.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Dr. Gopnik, you know, she teaches at UCal Berkeley.
Right. She teaches at Berkeley.
Again, like as you said, she's a parenting expert, and she makes the argument that, you know, there isn't a right way. There isn't this formula that we can follow that's going to automatically or consistently result in the outcome that we want.
That's right.
That parenting is a little bit more complex than that.
Right.
But also requires, I almost want to say a little bit less planning. It's like you can't formulate it. It's just sort of overall what you do.
That's right. To me, what she's trying to say in this wonderful video and article is that children develop on their own. There's brain development, physical development, language development. And for all of this development to occur, children have to be nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
But there's there's a limit as to what parents can do
right. To
change or aid or assist that development.
Right.
You can create the circumstances mm-hmm. for development, mm-hmm. but you probably can't engineer it.
Right.
You can't, the word now we use is micromanage.
Right.
Right. But what this woman is arguing is you can't micromanage that. The most you can do is to create the circumstances. And she said throughout human history, parents have created the circumstances for development.
Right.
Now we're trying to engineer development. And I think that's where the divergence occurs, is that should we be trying to engineer development?
Right.
She would argue no.
Right. You know, so as we kind of go through what some of the things that was discussed in this paper or this article or blog, we still didn't decide what it is. there's a section called the evolution of childhood.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in that section, mm-hmm. they talked about mm-hmm. something that we've mentioned before, but does bear and necessitate sort of a revisit. And that is right. that as childhood for humans lasts much longer right. than childhood in just about any other animal.
In every species, right.
You know, if we think about, you know, whether we want to think about it legally, 18 years.
Right.
So if we want to think about it religiously, it's 12 years, right?
Right.
About 12 years. Regardless of how we consider you know, the boundaries of childhood, we're talking about years of development and exposure to adults who, you know, are to provide guidance and support and assistance and all of that. But we're talking about a very long
That's right.
portion of our life.
We live longer mm-hmm. than most, and we develop more slowly than most. Mm-hmm. Think of a horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A horse is walking within minutes of its birth.
Right.
It takes us 12 months. The Kentucky Derby is run by horses that are 3 years old.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now horses only live until they're 30 mm-hmm. you know, or less. But we have a very long mm-hmm. developmental phase.
Right.
We are altricial.
Oh.
Precocial is you develop quickly. Altricial is we develop slowly. So we are, as a species, we are altricial.
Yeah.
It's
vocabulary time. No,
it's true.
Altricial, I don't know that
Like
word.
Rats. Why do we do experiments on rats? Because a rat becomes a teenager in a couple of months.
Right.
You know, they're born and they reach their teenage years within a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can see developmental changes very quickly.
Right.
If you do experiments on humans, it would be you'd have to wait 12 to 15 years.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it does take a long time, and that again the part that I think that really needs to be revisited with that is that because it takes so much longer, there is much more exposure
right.
to parenting again right. as a verb to parenting and to the influence of other adults and other people in our lives
right.
that help shape the way that we view and see the world and interact with others
That's
and
right.
manage relationships.
Yeah, we have these long developmental periods. If you think about it, you mentioned the age of 12.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have this period from birth to age 12,
mm-hmm.
and then you have the teenage years, and then you have the 20s, and so there are these decades, if
right.
you want, of development. Important things have to happen during each of
right.
those phases.
Right.
And that's the other thing she's arguing, is that from an evolutionary standpoint, There is a reason why mm-hmm. development takes so long in humans.
Right.
And during each phase, certain things should happen.
Right.
And if we, and it may be very difficult to alter that.
Right.
And she's saying that as a species, we did it this way for 5,000 or 6,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we're going to make this change.
Yeah.
And that change may not be to our benefit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. And so she talks about the triple threat.
Yeah, she talked, right. And that's a major theme that we really ought to talk about. The first one is?
The first one is that from this evolutionary perspective,
mm-hmm.
Mothers are invested in the outcome of their offspring.
That's right.
And that, this shared involvement in raising children, it was really important because, a lot of times, evolutionarily speaking, mm-hmm. a lot of times mothers didn't survive the birth,
right.
or, the mother would have other kids. There's other people that have to be taken care of. And mm-hmm. so, the mother is really focused on strengthening and raising the child so that they can then move on to be able to do other things that they need to do and to be able to help and nurture the other people.
That's right. Around. And in our species, monogamy seems to be more important.
Right.
More fundamentally important in our species than in other species.
Right.
Lions have a pride.
Right.
They have, one lion right. has several lionesses. In our species, monogamy is much more important. And
right.
so both parents are invested
Mm-hmm.
get invested. And so one of the threats is you have two people,
yeah.
especially if you have an only child,
mm-hmm.
and you have these two adults
right.
who, we do it anyway, we do it right. as it's one of our inherited traits is we take care of our young. So now you have these two adults
yeah.
focused completely on this one individual or mm-hmm. even two individuals. Now, if you have 6 or 7 kids,
yeah.
you start to dilute the parental influence. But one of the threats is parents will invest heavily in the right. development of their children.
Yeah.
So that's one threat.
Yeah.
Okay. Second threat is?
The second part of the triple threat has to do with the extra generations, the
right.
presence of grandmothers. And so
right.
not only do we have the two parents, but now we have the influence of this extended family of right. grandparents, especially grandmothers,
right.
In the development and raising
the Because
child.
They were present.
Right.
The only two species that have grandmothers who do this are ours. And killer whales, as it mm-hmm. turns out.
Orcas.
Orcas, right. And my parents both knew their grandparents
mm-hmm.
Because they were part of the right. extended family. It's not that they lived together,
right.
but they lived near enough
yeah.
that grandparents functioned almost as surrogate parents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so that's another unique feature of our species, that here you have more than... You already have two parents,
right.
but now you have more than two
right.
who are going to invest in this child.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So then the third part of the triple threat is that we have sort of developed to yeah. ensure the survival and growth of human offspring and strengthen their future adaptation. Because of the availability of alloparents.
That's a new word.
So we have... And so what this triple threat is it offers us an insight into the number of influences, adult influences,
right.
on the development of a child. And
That's
so
right.
and we're moving outward. So we have the parents... We have the extended family or grandparents,
right.
and now we have alloparents. And that's where we get the idea of it takes a village.
Right, right. And these alloparents, one of the things that she says
non-relative about them, caregivers.
Yeah, they're non-relative, who were around,
mm-hmm.
and they helped raise the children.
Right.
Now, what she says about that is, these might have been older siblings or cousins
mm-hmm.
or friends or mm-hmm. people lived
right.
more closely together. And... she said that typically young children would learn how to raise children because
mm-hmm.
they were exposed to them.
Right.
What's happening today, and so you would learn how to nurture children because you were raising children essentially
right.
most of your life.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening today is you don't have alloparents.
Right.
People go to school, go to college,
mm-hmm.
and you're not exposed to raising young children.
Right.
And so... your mindset is, well, I'll approach child rearing the way I approach everything else.
Right.
I'll take a course,
mm-hmm.
I'll get books, I'll look it up on the internet, And I will, just like I took my college classes, mm-hmm. just like I learned how to mm-hmm. cook, right. you know, I wanted to learn how to cook. So I took cooking classes and I bought books and I watched videos
right.
and mastered this,
yeah.
this art of cooking.
Right.
They approach child rearing the same way, mm-hmm. not from experience,
right.
but from learning what techniques they need to use mm-hmm. and then applying them as though they're learning some new skill called parenting.
Right. Right. Yeah. So we're going to, and we're going to get to and kind of dig into that idea of goal-centered parenting right. here in just a second. But I think first, I think that should really, something that really should be emphasized about this triple threat mm-hmm. is that, you know, that was the influence in the way things have been done for
right.
a long, long time.
Thousands of years. Yeah.
And that is changing.
Right.
And that is, you know, we have more single parents mm-hmm. now. So we have now removed one That's half right. mm-hmm. of that first part.
The first threat. Mm-hmm.
And then the second, as we go to the second part, you know, sometimes we, you know, because the world is getting smaller, right. you know, we move away. And, right. you know, so we don't have the influence and the connection with extended families. I mean, mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of families that I work with who live in this area and, you know, their nearest relative lives two states away.
Especially here in Florida,
yeah.
which is a migratory state. You know, people mm-hmm. come here and frequently they don't have family connections. Right. Many, many people live in Florida,
right.
don't have any family connections.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then of course, the issue with the alloparents is yeah. we all know it's pretty openly discussed that we no longer live in a world where, you know, we are caring for each other.
That's right.
Instead, we want to, you know, demonize others, if anything, you know, stay away from those people. Don't go,
right.
you know, don't go talk to your neighbors. What are you doing?
Right.
And mm-hmm. and so this shift has really changed the way in which we're raising kids
right.
and it's changing the dynamics. And I think that, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a chicken or egg type of thing. You know, did we mm-hmm. become more goal-centered, goal-oriented with our parenting because we started losing those other resources? Or did we start eliminating those other resources because we became more goal-centered, goal-oriented? I'm not sure which came first.
Right. No, but there has been this sea change. There's been
right.
this enormous change. Yeah. And how we have raised children for thousands of years mm-hmm. has changed. And now it's become a skill to learn
right.
and to practice. And so we... but the effect of that... No matter how tempting it might be to engineer your children,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do they call it? Reverse engineering?
Right.
No, this is what I want, so I'm going to reverse engineer
right.
it. This is what I want my adult to look like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And so we're going to reverse engineer this thing. So I have
yeah.
to go back and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do to this infant to create this model.
You know, what that reminds me of, and man, I should have pulled that article, and I don't remember it now, but or remember where it was. But remember the article that we reviewed months and months ago, where a guy wrote it whose son got into medical school, and he wrote, you know, this is how to get your kid into medical school,
right.
and it was basically reverse engineering. He,
right.
you know, his kid got into medical school, and he was like, oh man, I really must have done a really good job. So let me go back and look at all the things that I did
right.
to make sure that my kid got into medical school,
mm-hmm.
and. It, you know, it's those, yeah, but, you know, I don't know that it really had to do with that, but it's this idea that, yeah, that there's a recipe, there's
right.
a formula, and if you just follow the formula, everything's going to work out great.
It's a very seductive,
mm-hmm.
Very tempting.
Absolutely.
Because what we do is we say, well, if I want my child to go to an Ivy League college,
mm-hmm.
that I want my child to go to college. But that's usually not the goal. I want my child to go to the best college.
Right.
So my child has the most advantages.
Yeah.
Okay? If I want him to go there, then he has to go to the best high school.
Right.
And when he goes to high school, he has to get all A's.
Right.
And then to get to accomplish that, he has to go to a certain middle school and get all A's.
Right.
And on down the line
right.
until you get to what's the best daycare center.
Right.
How do I get my child ready for the best kindergarten?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in places like New York and Atlanta, Chicago, Parents spend tens of thousands of dollars for the right kindergarten, and they spend thousands of dollars getting their children ready to take the test for that kindergarten.
Yeah,
and it's a cottage industry in New York.
A test for kindergarten,
right? To get into the right kindergarten, and those people vie for those positions and they compete for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in some cities, this has been raised. It's at a frenetic pace to get your kids into the right kindergarten.
Yeah.
So we understand the temptation.
Mm-hmm.
We understand the parental desire mm-hmm. to make this happen. But in doing that, in engineering each activity or each year or mm-hmm. what each report card is going to look like, we rob our children of one of the most important aspects of their development.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she's concerned with.
Right.
So I'm not sure that she's saying don't do this,
right?
Because I think that most parents are going to be invested in their children.
Right.
But she's saying be careful how you do it,
mm-hmm.
because you are removing something from your child's right. life that he or she may need
right.
to fully develop.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so another line that mm-hmm. is in here, it says... She says, for the first time, mm-hmm. there were people who had children after spending many years working and or going to school, but not taking care of kids.
Right.
So, you know, and I think that lends to this idea that it's so seductive and attractive mm-hmm. to say, if I just buy this book,
that's right.
this handbook
mm-hmm.
for raising an emotionally healthy child... What?
Whoa.
But if I just buy this book...
Full disclosure.
Then... then I will know everything what to do.
That's right.
Because, you know, I've gone to school, I've been working, and I've, you know, I haven't raised any children, I haven't been around any
That's
kids
right.
for a couple of decades now, but, you know, I really want to have kids, and so I just need this experience. I mean, up until, you know, maybe the 1950s or so, women, families, couples, tended to have children right out of high school,
very early.
You know, by their early 20s, they had all the children that they were going to have.
My grandmother had 10 before she was 25. She had her first when she was 14. She was done having babies by 25.
No matter what your age, if you have 10 kids, you should be done.
Only 7 survived, but you know, in those days, childbirth was a dangerous business, and so 7 survived. But people had large families. You know, these are Catholic families, and they had large families.
Yeah,
they weren't allowed to use any
birth control. But they lived on a farm, right?
They lived in a small village.
A small village
where they could do some farming.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you had to have kids just to.
They just had
do
kids.
The work.
You know, they were big families.
Yeah,
and they sort of took care of each other, but. Yeah, what people are doing now is they're not learning how to be parents.
Mm-hmm.
They're studying how to be parents.
Right.
They're getting this wisdom from books and YouTube and other videos.
You know what I think is a great example of this is the difference when you have new parents, the difference mm-hmm. between the way they manage their first child and their third child. Their first child, everything is clean, sterilized, everything. By the time the third child comes along, they're picking the pacifier up off the floor, just kind of blowing
it
off and give it. Yeah, it's fine.
Lick the dirt off the pacifier and give it.
But
to your
that kid. Is that's the difference here, right? The difference is that you know it has to be sterile and clean, mm-hmm. and everything has to be perfect. Versus the reality is that kids lick the floor. You know, it's like
they're playing on the floor all day and they're putting their hands in their mouths.
Right. And so we get so caught up in some of these things. And so when we're trying to parent in this pristine environment or this with this pristine perspective, I think there's a lot of flaws.
I think that's an absolutely appropriate point to make. We have a hand sanitizer now,
mm-hmm.
and you can have hand sanitizer all over the house.
Right.
And you're squirting your baby's hands
constantly.
Okay, you can try to create this quasi-sterile environment.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the unintended consequence of that?
Yeah.
Your child doesn't develop immunities,
yep.
and they're prone to all these illnesses
right.
because you're denying them the opportunity to develop a hardy immune system.
So what happens at the beginning of every school year? They miss a couple of days because they get sick.
Right.
you know, because then they get exposed to...
Let them eat dirt. Let them roll around on the floor. That's how they're going to develop their immunities. I mean, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I love
when you think about how children live for years. I mean, they lived in dwellings that had dirt floors.
Right.
With bugs and creatures, and the animals lived in the same...
You said creatures. Bugs and creatures.
Things, you know, that live in the dirt.
Yeah.
And they would eat those. I mean, but that's how you develop a robust immune system,
right,
is by exposing your body in small doses to these things.
Yeah. That always reminds me, this is... I won't go into a lot of detail, but I remember early on when I was working with you, you would eat like sandwiches that had been in your car all day with like, even with mayonnaise on it and everything. And you would like, I was like, Richard, that's like awful. And you would eat it anyways. You said, I'm just building up my immune system.
It's good for your immune system. Look at how good I look at 92. I mean, the mayonnaise worked, right?
92.
No, my, people are so fussy about food. You know, my kids could survive anywhere, because you leave food out for a couple of days and still eat. We have violated every rule.
Just brush that.
Cut the green stuff off and eat it anyway. And it appalls other people, you know, my mother and other family members. But like I say, look like at me.
Everybody else.
That's right. But this is important, because in the rest of this article, she says the reason that children have this slow maturation,
right,
is that they have to go, it takes a long time for them to acquire the skills that they're going to need to live this very long life,
right,
and to raise their own children and to have a partner and to educate. So we have this very long lifespan, and it takes a long time and a lot of skills. You know, most species have a very limited repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
They have to learn about three or four things. You know, feral cats need to learn how to hunt and reproduce.
Right.
Okay, both of which they do instinctively. Mm-hmm. We have a large and enormous repertoire of behaviors that we have to learn. Okay.
Yeah.
So it takes longer. And what she's saying is that the process, take a child from birth to puberty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There are so many things that they have to learn at that time to get ready for puberty and adulthood. And the way you learn it is by experimenting.
Right.
Okay. The child learns through experience.
Mm-hmm.
Piaget told us this.
Yes.
The great Swiss, well, actually a zoologist, but he said he referred to children as little scientists.
Yes.
They're always experimenting with their world to figure out how things work. And what this woman is saying is that we have to give children that opportunity to experiment with their world, because that's how they're going to learn things.
Yeah.
And one of the most important ways, surest ways to learn something, is by making mistakes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And if you're engineering your children so that they don't make mistakes, once again, just like you deny them the opportunity to develop an immune system, you can also deny them the opportunity for any kind of development.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this entire section on that they call the Bayesian.
Bayesian. Did you have to study that
babies
when you were in?
Mm-mm.
It appeared in the late 80s and early 90s in grad. It was just introduced.
Yeah.
The guy's name is Bayes, B-A-Y-E-S. And it's a statistical modeling procedure that I never understood.
Yeah.
I mean, it was brand new when we learned it, and most of us never really understood it. It's used in test development too, but beyond my pay grade.
Well, they talk about it a little bit here, but she mentions in her talk, she mentions just that. She says the young children are actually better at finding something unusual or unlikely, better at solving problems than the older children are.
That's right.
And or even the adults.
Right.
So she's talking about how this exploration,
right,
this the fact that kids are little scientists, and we have to let them go out and problem solve and figure out how to do things.
That's
without
the
immediate involvement of the adults and parents.
Right. Children are going to explore their world.
Right.
Our role as a parent is to keep them alive.
Right.
They are going to do things that could be potentially dangerous. I mean, yes, it would be problematic to put a child on a table and for that child to explore what would happen if she crawled off, or ate something dangerous.
But I think that even that is a fantastic example, because what do we know from the cliff experiments?
That's right.
we know that kids, even as before they can even walk, mm-hmm. they are able to see that depth perception, and they will look over and they won't just jump off.
They might fall off accidentally.
Right.
But they're not going to crawl off a table.
Yeah.
They may lose their balance. Mm-hmm. But when they look at it, even very young infants,
yeah.
they're going to know not to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. There's something in it. So
there's some videos of that on YouTube.
They're wonderful.
That are fantastic.
Right. Right.
Because you can see these, they put a glass over the little cliff, right. and so they can't really fall. But
kid puts his hand down. Whoa. Yeah. Better not do that.
Yeah.
So they have this innate sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if we just let them explore, they'll eventually learn it. Now, if they pick up a Cheerio on the floor and eat it, that's okay. If they pick up a pill, mm-hmm. okay. So our job as a parent is to make sure that they have a safe environment right. to explore
right.
and that they don't do anything that could be harmful.
Right.
But exactly. let them develop. Let them make mistakes.
Right.
From birth to five, from 5 to 10, from 10 to 15, give your children the opportunity to learn these things on their own.
Right. Yeah. So should we get to the moral of the story?
I could talk about this for the rest of the morning.
I know you can.
I'm getting fired up now. It's your fault.
See you right there.
No, I'm telling you, you know, I have to settle down. What I like about this is we know that we're going to do as much as we can for our children.
Right.
And give them every advantage we can afford.
Right.
We know all that. But somewhere in this process of parenting, you have to build in, you also have to engineer some failure.
Right.
They're going to learn through their mistakes. We all learn more from our mistakes than we do from our successes.
Right.
We all learn more from our failures than our triumphs.
Yeah.
You have to allow your children the opportunity to make a mistake.
Right.
I think the worst thing you can do for a child is to give them the feeling that all they have to do is follow this recipe mm-hmm. of success after success after success. And that the result will be success.
Right.
That hasn't happened.
Right.
There's another article we did, I think we did it this past week, about putting so much emphasis on academic development, on mm-hmm. academic success, that we're ignoring other developmental, other aspects of kids' development.
Right.
So they have truncated social skills.
Right.
And they don't know how to handle disappointment.
Right.
They don't know how to handle failure. They don't know how to do things for themselves mm-hmm. because everything has been engineered.
Right.
I think it was one of the talks we did this week. I'll have to go back and look at them. But we put this emphasis on academic development because what are most parents? Most parents are stressing athletic development and academic development.
Right.
I mean, that's where we're putting all of our energy. But yet there's all these other developmental skills that we need to acquire.
Right.
And we're denying kids the opportunity to learn those.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So the moral of the story.
Yes.
Back to of the story. The moral of the story is that there is not a correct way.
No.
There are many, many paths to Oz, right? There are many, many ways to get to your ultimate destination.
Right. Right.
There are traditional paths, there are non-traditional paths, there are easy paths, there are more challenging paths, but
right. But
you know, the overall reality is that there are many, many ways to get where you're trying to go and to, you know, for your kids to be able mm-hmm. to find success. And because they didn't get into that perfect kindergarten, or because they failed that algebra test, or because they, you know, didn't get into that, you know, their first choice college or something like that, does not necessarily mean in any way that they are not going to be able to accomplish mm-hmm. what they need to accomplish, that they are going to become what it is that they hope to become. Instead, we need to think as parents, we're developing a person. We're not developing a doctor. We're not developing an attorney.
That's right.
We're developing a person. And that person has to be multifaceted. That person right. has to have skills in a broad range of areas. And when we spend so much time trying to engineer and to focus and to ensure mm-hmm. that their development in one particular area is perfect, mm-hmm. is you know, meet some expectation,
that's right.
meet mm-hmm. some level, we are automatically, I mean, it's impossible not to then neglect lots and lots of other areas.
That's right. Go ahead and nurture your child in the academic areas, but
right.
don't do it at the expense of everything
right.
else.
Okay? Yeah.
That's not going to end up the way you want it to
right.
end up.
Right.
David and Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
can't remember his name, the author. But in David and Goliath, he talks about...
Wait, are you talking about from the Bible?
No.
Are you talking about Malcolm Gladwell?
Malcolm Gladwell. Okay. The book that Malcolm...
I was going to say, I think it was Abraham. That may have... But it was Malcolm Gladwell. Was it Abraham?
And he talks in that book about the young woman who went to Brown University, got mm-hmm. into Brown, you know, a successful student, and absolutely fell apart.
Yeah.
Because while at mm-hmm. Brown, she got a B+.
Yeah.
And he said she would have been much better off going to an excellent state university, mm-hmm. and that would have been her path to success.
Right.
So she was able to get into Brown, but she didn't have the resources
right.
to handle it because everything else had been
right.
ignored.
Right.
It had been engineered so that she would always get an A. Mm-hmm. When she didn't get an A, she didn't fail.
Right.
She got a B.
Yeah.
And she did not know how to handle that.
Yeah.
She was ill-equipped,
yeah.
fell apart, and gave up her dream.
Yeah.
But she was completely capable of achieving. But
yeah.
she gave it up because she fell short of some...
She was completely capable of achieving academically.
That's right. That's right.
Not socially, emotionally.
Right. She could have become a doctor or a mm-hmm. scientist mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. She had the intellectual yeah. ability and the educational background to do it.
Yeah.
But she didn't have the personal resources
right.
that she needed to handle it.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to remember, that there's a whole child. We're not raising doctors. We're raising people
right.
who might become doctors
right.
or teachers or engineers yeah. Or quarterbacks.
Yeah. And we've met those doctors who don't have the social, emotional development to...
And we've met many millennials
mm-hmm.
who were raised this way,
yeah.
and they get to their 20s and they're not sure what to do now.
Right.
That it's not being engineered anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, once you leave the university, once mm-hmm. you leave the academic setting, there isn't a semester by semester path to
right.
follow.
Yeah,
you have to know. You have to have other skills.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right.
So this is worth your time.
Yeah.
So, check the video out. If you're doing something, just plug it in and watch it while you're doing something this weekend.
Yeah.
Or next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen
It'll
to
be
it.
Great. It's really good. And mm-hmm. Just think about this a little bit. As you're right. thinking about how you're going to respond to your kids, report cards come out soon. So think
yeah,
about that as the report cards are coming
yeah,
out.
Design your house for all the things that kids need to do.
Absolutely. And
design your lives for everything, not just academics.
Absolutely. So, all right, that is it for today.
It's good talking to everybody again.
Yeah.
It's nice seeing you, by the way. I like the shirt. Is that new?
No.
It's nice. You look nice today.
You see that?
And what day is it?
Until next time.
We always have 2 days. Now, we have the real day, and then we have the video day.
Well, we're recording this on Friday, and it just goes out on Sunday.
Because I'm never sure what to say. You see, because I've made that mistake many times. I say, well, this is... And they say... And then afterwards, I always say, remember that this is not Friday. It's really Saturday. So...
This is an example. I'm working really hard to raise the entire person, not just the great psychologist.
And don't criticize my grandmother.
I didn't criticize your grandmother.
They had too many kids.
10 kids, a lot of kids.
She had 10 pregnancies. She had 7 survived. But she got married when she was 13. Well, she didn't have to get married. For the reason she had to get married is they lived in a dangerous area. And so for her own protection, her parents decided to get her married to protect her safety. It's another story we can talk about some other time.
In our next therapy session.
But she was...
Let's talk about your grandmother a little bit. It's okay. All right. Until next time. I don't know. We could just keep going like this forever. So, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.